Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyek. The budget for the fiscal year that begins on July 1st in California is close to being in the books, as they say. It's the first state budget for Governor Gavin Newsom. Here to tell us about what's in it is Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. Ben, sometimes there are certain weeks I wonder when you sleep. And I bet your family does, too.
Yes.
Why was this happening on a Sunday night?
Why was this happening on a Sunday night? I mean, really, like, did it really have to happen on a Sunday night? Let me answer somewhat rhetorically with the phrase, mo money, mo problems. Mm. Because California has a lot of money right now, $21.5 billion. So there's a lot more people who say, we got a chance at getting a piece of this, and we think we better get in this year.
That's the surplus, the
$21.5 billion budget surplus. And these things don't come around every day in a state that had a $40 billion deficit about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. So given that, I think you saw that folks who were in the governor's office and lobbying the governor's office and folks in the legislature and those lobbying the legislature all felt that this was an important year. They'd been trying to get a lot of their things into the budget, a lot of their priorities in recent years. Governor Jerry Brown and Democratic legislative leaders they increased spending each year and there were new investments each year. But it was perhaps we'll see what the final budget size is under what Gavin Newsom ends up signing. We don't have a size now, but it was, you know, a modest increase, but it wasn't a huge jump. And there were never surpluses like $21.5 billion. Right. So right now, I think that is what happened, is you had a lot of people who wanted to do a lot of things, and some of them were really complicated, as we'll get into, in terms of how you actually achieve them and how you negotiate them. And so I think that slowed things down. That said, they didn't really have to do it on a Sunday. There was talk they were going to wrap things up Thursday or Friday of last week, and it stretched some more.
And all the way into your Sunday evening.
And it would have stretched longer if not for the fact that when you resolve a conference committee, which is what the Senate and Assembly do for the budget these days, it takes several days to get a bill into print. That will need to happen by Tuesday in order to vote by Friday, which is what the legislature wants to do to avoid having everyone here on Saturday. Saturday is the constitutional budget deadline, June 15th.
I was just going to ask you about this is in the Constitution that this all has to happen in this fashion.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have to pass a budget deal. You can pass a spending plan. You could pass a ham sandwich, call it a spending plan, and you would meet the terms of the deadline and avoid having lawmakers pay docked under Proposition 25, which also made a majority vote budget in 2010. And that matters because Republicans don't need to agree on everything. So, yeah, I mean, that's why it was, they were doing it last night, is they wanted to try to reach as much of a deal and move it forward by June 15th as possible.
Ben, in a story that you wrote on Friday, you listed a number of things to watch for in the state's budget. How did your projections fare?
I didn't necessarily project what would be in and what would be out, but the things to look for were the things I was looking for yesterday afternoon as words started breaking. So, you know, we can go through some of the issues that we talked about. In some areas like homelessness and housing, as you'll hear from your next guest, Matt Levin with CalMatters, we have very, very little detail about what is in the budget and what is out. But for others, like say
healthcare,
preschool and healthcare, we have some more detail. We don't have, for any of these things, tons of specifics, but we have some details.
And those were both issues that the governor mentioned when he took office that were important to him, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He has talked about from the start. In fact, his main campaign ads were run on early childhood education. And he wants to achieve universal preschool for four-year-olds. That's not all going to happen in one year's budget, but this budget does take some initial steps in a couple of different ways. It creates more, we call them slots, the wonks at the Capitol call them slots, preschool right. slots, and that's basically availability. One, you know, money, state money funds one slot for one child. And there's a cost that goes with that one slot for one child. So there's roughly $130 million in ongoing in the state budget that's going to fund these slots. And that's going to be for low-income four-year-olds, income-eligible four-year-olds. And those are going to start phasing in. Additionally, there is one-time money, and I don't have that exact figure in front of me, some one-time money for facilities upgrades, because the goal is to create some full-day pre-kindergarten and kindergarten programs, and you need more facilities and better facilities in better shape in order to achieve that. So those are some steps in the budget for Gavin Newsom on his one of his priorities of early childhood education. Separately, the Assembly Democrats were pushing for additional preschool slots and rate increases, provider rate increases. If you think about if you are a provider, the amount of money that you get per child. So you've got a slot, which is a base amount, and then is there any increase on top of that? So there are some new slots for all ages in childcare and rate increases for childcare providers. A lot of that is actually going to be funded out of cannabis tax revenue. And that was a bit of a debate because an argument had been made that the money maybe go to after school programs for older kids. If you think about, you know, cannabis and the nexus there,
right.
Trying to keep kids from falling prey to drug use, maybe drugs that aren't cannabis, perhaps, if, you know, the arguments of backers of Proposition 64 who believe cannabis is not a big threat, but making sure that young adults, teenagers have safe places to be. So either way, that's the type of argument that happens when you have a lot of money coming in from a lot of different sources.
We spoke a lot last week about possible health care options and expanding who's covered and who's not. What ended up passing through?
There are two main areas to highlight. One is expanding Medi-Cal. That's California's Medicaid program, health care for low-income people. That program is being expanded to serve for the first time, and we believe, our health care reporter Sammy Cahill believes, the first state in the nation to do this, to expand Medi-Cal to offer health insurance, health care coverage to undocumented young adults living in California illegally. So that's 18 to 25. California already provides and began doing so a few years back under former Governor Brown, began offering health care, Medi-Cal, to undocumented children. So now we have young adults. Now, Democrats also wanted to do, in the legislature, also proposed a couple of other things. Health care for undocumented senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That was rejected. Did not make it into this deal. Health care for young adults. There was a proposal to have the age increase each year. So maybe year one, you've got 18 to 25-year-olds, but then year two, 18 to 26. Year three, 18 to 27. That also was not included in the budget deal. So as far as health care for undocumented Californians, under this deal, California will provide Medi-Cal to ages 0 through 25 once this new program for the young adults is phased in, which the implementation date, my understanding is January 1st.
And this was a plan that the governor had indicated he would support?
Yes, it's something he proposed in his January budget and may revise. So he was on board with this. I think if you asked him, he would say, we want to create, in fact, he will say he wants universal health care coverage that is for everyone and, a citizen, non-citizen, regardless of legal status. But there's the question of what do you fund this year and what do you try to do in future years?
There are new possible sources for money for the state, new revenue streams like clean drinking water, or the 911 fee or the individual mandate?
Yes. And let's start with the individual mandate because it lets me cover the second part of the new healthcare investments from this budget. So California is going to reinstate the individual mandate. You might recall the phrase individual mandate as being part of the original Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, passed many years ago, requiring everyone to have health insurance or pay a fine, a penalty. And that was terminated by President Trump and congressional Republicans as part of the 2017 federal tax overhaul, which, by the way, the federal tax overhaul looms large in these budget negotiations for a completely separate discussion.
Right. We'll get to that.
Yes. But that same vote nullified the federal individual mandate. California, starting in 2020, so starting January 1st, is going to reinstate that mandate. It's projected to bring in a fair amount of money. The state is going to take the money that comes in through that mandate and invest it right back into covered California, the state's Affordable Health Care Act health benefit exchange. They're going to use that money and some extra general fund money, because the mandate money will not entirely pay for what they want to do, which is to increase subsidies for on the exchange to low-income Californians, which would, as let me see the particular wording, it would basically fully take care of the premium. The premium for low income. There we go. Fully cover the cost of the plan. Had to find my notes on that. Right. Sorry about that. And then a bigger investment is for middle income Californians. And this is breaking new ground, apparently, which is if you earn between 400 and 600% of the federal poverty level, you're kind of in no person's land. You make too much to be on Medi-Cal. You don't really have that. And you make too much to get subsidies through covered California.
What would that be, like around 100,000 or so?
It may depend on where what part of the state you live in.
Oh, right.
So there's a poverty level, and it's, you know, if it is adjusted by cost of living, and this is a technical point that I am not clear on, but basically, if you earn between 400 and 600% of the federal poverty level, you don't really get subsidy help on covered California. You don't get Medi-Cal, and you can't afford insurance on the private market. So if the goal is to create universal health care, and you just put a mandate out there, well, how are you going to, you know, if you're in that 400-600% range, you're really going to
struggle.
So this is designed to take more than, I guess, $100 a month off your healthcare premium, somewhere between $100 and $200. I'm still looking at details, and that's on average and all that. So that is a pretty significant proposal for folks who are middle class, but maybe on the lower end of the middle class, who struggle to purchase health insurance.
Let's talk a little bit about the clean drinking water.
Sure.
Originally,
it won't be a fee.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Originally, it was proposed as like a tax, right?
The governor wanted a fee on water bills to fund a help fund a and also on the ag industry to help fund clean drinking water for impoverished communities that simply do not have drinkable water.
And these aren't just little pockets.
There's some pretty big swaths. And this was a big debate at the Capitol, because everyone agreed that it's a problem, everyone in all parties. The question is, you have a $21.5 billion surplus. So do you take from existing funding, or do you come up with a new fee for water users? How do you pay for this? And so the answer is, it's not coming from the state's general fund. It's also not coming as a fee. Some of the money is going to come from the ag industry through, this gets pretty technical, but you may recall California has a cap and trade system. Mm. And there's auctions on greenhouse gas emission credits that the polluters will purchase, and then they can trade amongst themselves. The money that comes in from that is split up in a gajillion different ways, including high-speed rail. But there's also money to help the ag industry. For example, there's money to help the ag industry purchase cleaner vehicles, you know, cleaner emission tractors, for example. There are a few pots of money that go to the ag industry. From that money that goes to the ag industry, there's going to be money that's going to be pulled from that and instead go to help create or help clean up this drinking water.
We're speaking with Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, because how late did it go last night, Ben?
Conference committee started around 5-ish and wrapped up, I want to say, after 9.
Uh-huh.
There was a race to bedtime between conference committee and my 2-year-old, and it was too close to call because it wrapped up about the time the babbles and kicks against the wall stopped.
Right.
But it was a fun multitask. It went pretty late.
This is a budget deal for the state of California.
Deal apparently is a bit too strong a word. There are still some outstanding issues, including a pretty meaty one, which deals with tax conformity, which is wonky, but it's basically conforming California's tax code to the new federal tax overhaul from a couple of years ago that we mentioned earlier. And the reason this matters, it would bring in potentially $1.5 billion more to the state. Business groups are actually surprisingly somewhat okay with this. They like having the tax codes conform. It's easier. But then what you have is how to spend that money. The governor wants to take a lot of that money and turn it into an expanded earned income tax credit for low-income working Californians. It's a tax credit that is intended to incentivize getting people to work. And that, too, is something that tends to have some Republican support. But there's also a question of, you know, what do you take that money, all of the money, and how do you invest the money? And so that's all tangled up. They weren't able to land that piece and maybe a couple other pieces of the deal. Negotiations will continue through the end of the month. New fiscal year starts July 1st.
We won't know the exact dollar figure on this budget for a while, but it's safe to say more than $200 billion.
Yeah, if you take general fund and some of the other funds that are part of the state budget overall, the governor proposed well over $200 billion of a budget in the May revise. It'll be around there, but we don't have an exact dollar figure until the governor signs it. And then we tend to get that dollar figure at that point.
So we also mentioned a 911 fee. Isn't that paid for through our phone bills?
It is not currently, but it would be under this proposal. It's sometimes decried as a text tax, although, Democrats obviously say no, it's not. Again, another situation where everyone agrees about the goal. California has what Governor Newsom describes as an analog emergency response system in a digital era. So should we be able to send text messages to 911 from our phones? Well, you can't right now. And if you're going to, and then there's the question of how do you reach people, reverse 911, and that the systems have struggled. I think Paradise is a good example at the campfire.
Right.
And so if the goal is to modernize California's emergency response system, how do you pay for it? Do you pay for it out of existing money, or do you pay for it out of this fee? So there will be a vote on the fee. And I think perhaps the fact that there is not going to be a vote on a water fee might make it a little more
easy to
politically
pass
to pass the 911 fee. As one staffer put it to me, it's a lot easier to explain to voters.
During Governor Newsom's first speech, he also mentioned homelessness and Mayor Steinberg to sit on it. Is it a commission?
Yeah. I mean, with Newsom, sometimes they're commissions, sometimes they're task forces, sometimes they're strike teams.
Right. Whatever it's
entity.
Called.
Yeah, yes.
Right. Is there funding to address homelessness in this new budget?
There is. And Matt Levin can tell you more about what we know and what we don't know. That's called a forward promote to our next segment, because we really don't know a lot. What we know is that it's similar to what the governor had previously proposed in the May revise. We know there's going to be, I'll just highlight a couple of programs and let Matt take it from there. There will be $500 million to construct roads, water, and sewage at infill development sites where housing cannot yet be built. So that's money that can maybe jumpstart some housing from the public sector. And then $650 million for local governments and homelessness emergency aid. Total between housing and homelessness, well over $2 billion in the final spending plan. Again, though, we beyond what I said and a couple of other programs that were briefly mentioned, we just don't have details.
So all of this is happening at the Capitol, and it really affects each and every one of us, some element of this budget, right? What does the average person walking around today who just doesn't know much about state politics here need to know about what just happened last night?
Well, certainly, if you're struggling to afford health insurance, or if you're struggling to send your kid to childcare or preschool, there are investments in this budget, new spending, that will affect you. If you're struggling to afford a home, it's a little harder to see what precisely will come out of this budget. We're waiting for more details. And, to what extent can a state budget throw money at this problem as opposed to addressing regulations and regulatory concerns? As you know, Randall, from your coverage, and as Matt coming up next can talk about, there's been a lot of issues, a lot of bills that sought to spur housing in terms of regulatory and policy changes that died, or at least have stalled for the time being. So you can throw money at this problem, but I don't know that you're going to really solve the entire base problem with this budget. Then again, we don't know what's in this budget on housing and homelessness. For all we know, they're going to sneak a little provision in there that would move mountains, and we won't know until we see the language. But
You'll keep following it for us,
yes.
So we will know when it happens. Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, as always, thanks for being on Insight. Much more about the state budget on our website, written by Ben at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station. This is Capitol Public Radio.